Hello there, and welcome to Quite So. I am your host, Dada, and I want to remind you that this podcast airs bi-weekly on Sundays on the following platforms: YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and iHeartRadio. Visit my website, dadaisms.com, that's D-A-D-A-I-S-M-S, dadaisms.com, and you will hop on my creative journey, and you'll be able to link to all my platforms. Today's episode is titled Money Dynamics 3, the Michael A. Scarpati interview. When I aired my first episode on Money Dynamics, I had no idea that it will turn into a mini-series, but here we are. After the interview with Kim Kent that aired two Sundays ago, today I am interviewing Michael A. Scarpati, co-founder and CEO of a company called Retire US. Scarpati founded Retire US to literally democratize financial freedom. He is revolutionizing financial wellness with a platform designed for clarity and simplicity, and most importantly, designed to empower the individual with little known facts about the financial world, facts usually kept by the social and business elite. Now, because Retire US is an American company, you will hear terms such as 401k, IRA, Roth, HSA. These are just retirement and insurance plans that most employees receive as benefits as they reach middle management and higher management in companies. Those of you who do not live in the USA and who obviously do not benefit from these retirement plans and insurance plans should stay tuned regardless, because financial advice is universal and we touch on a lot of interesting points in today's conversation. And so without further ado, let's begin with the interview. Hello, Michael Scarpati. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thank you, first of all, Dada, for having me on the show. I'm excited to get into to all sorts of financial topics with you.
So you're the CEO currently of Retire US after you've been actually CEO of a previous company as well and the VP in another company. So can you tell us a bit before we start talking about Retire US, how you felt your financial journey grew with all these experiences over the years? And how is Retire US different from the previous companies you've worked with?
Yeah, thank you for that question. The journey's been it's been about 15 years in financial services. So I started out as a financial planner, and I was in this independent channel, and that's kind of the origin story of why we built Retire US the way that we did. Is independent fiduciary financial planning is actually not the norm. So fiduciary financial planning means the advice legally needs to be in the best interest of the client. And the hard thing to believe is only about 10 to 15% of financial professionals fall under that standard. So 85 to 90% of financial advisors are giving advice that's not in the best interest of the client. So the industry is just dominated by large institutions, and most of the advisors work on behalf of those large institutions. Mm-hmm. And so it just creates this conflict of interest, essentially, that just exists and kind of has become the norm in the industry. And unfortunately, most of the investing public and the public that's looking to start having a little bit more consciousness and planning with their finances aren't super aware of how the industry is set up. And unfortunately, most people kind of end up getting advice for somebody that legally doesn't need to give it, that's in their best interest. And that's what we're here to solve.
Yeah. So what happened in your life journey that caused you to want to work with the 15% or towards, you know, helping the individual? So what was the catalyst there?
Yeah, it was really being in the industry, in the independent channel, and seeing a lot of people and a lot of bad financial advice that people were receiving, just because a lot of it's coming from areas where the professional has to work in a specific scope, kind of in a specific box. And seeing that over and over again, kind of created this different perspective and mentality of, you know, we really need to fight for the public. We need to fight for the every man and the every woman to make sure that they're getting high quality advice that's in their best interest, because if we don't, the reality is they're going to probably succumb to the industry standard, and the industry standard is actually a very low standard when it comes to high quality advice being, readily accessible in the norm. It's kind of the opposite. So it really came from just seeing a lot of people that thought they were in a good position, thought they were getting sound advice, and then when you kind of reassessed, gave the second opinion from the independent fiduciary lens, there was a lot of things that were missing that were, putting the individual in harm's way from a risk standpoint, or just overcharging from a fee standpoint, and just a lot of things that were not being uncovered and addressed. And we want to find a better path for people to create that financial freedom.
That's really amazing. And you're not only the CEO of RetireUS, you're also a founder or a co-founder. So how did you get other people to rally with you or like to work with you on this project? Because people usually look for maybe more monetary gain or what's been done. So how did you get to where you are now in RetireUS?
Well, it started through independent financial planning, and I started to build a practice with my other co-founder, Michael Blausch, who's the president of RetireUS. And we started back almost 15 years ago building our own financial planning practice. And funny enough, we kind of started to scale that practice through co-op programs. So universities have these programs where, you can learn the business, and you can kind of get immersed into a position before you graduate, so before you have to make that big life decision. So we collaborated with a handful of universities, and we built this program to give students the education that they need to enter into the independent channel with all the licensing, all of the understanding and the knowledge, so they can kind of really hit the ground running. The challenge in the independent channel is it's not a salaried channel. Right? You're building your own financial planning practice from zero, starting from zero. And that's really tough coming out of university when you have student loans a lot of times, and you're new and you're green in the industry. Then you got to go get your licenses. Then you need to learn the business. It's like a 12 to 24 month learning curve before you're going to be able to articulate what's necessary in order for someone to be comfortable with essentially handing over their life savings to you to manage. And so what we did is we created a program to streamline that and really cut a lot of time for the students to enter this career where they could learn all those things while they were actually still in university. And organically, we built out a team of financial planners in this practice, and we started to kind of bring people on organically over the past, I would call it probably 10 to 12 years. And it's really the companies have all grown together as this natural family mentor, type of an environment. It's been really beautiful. And as everybody's built their individual practices, RetireUS started to kind of formulate. So, the same team, the founding team, is Michael Blausch, and then actually my best friend from childhood, his name's Jonathan Vettori, he's the COO. We brought him in right when Cornerstone was the name of our practice. Cornerstone actually still does exist, and COVID was really the catalyst. When things started to move into virtual, we started to feel that there was this lane for kind of a better path for people to work with fiduciary financial planners. And we started kind of building some technology just in-house. And it really wasn't, again, it's kind of organically started to build. We started to try to make it a little bit more easier in the virtual setting. And then we were able to bring Jonathan on board. And with that, we really officially built RetireUS, which became this platform for blending technology with human relationships, so that fiduciary financial planning is easy, it's fast, it's accessible, and we can do that at scale.
You know, I can see now why it's already headed towards success because it took time and it, as you said, it grew organically. And I think that's the best way for anything to grow, you know, because it takes roots. It's beautiful that this is the road that you took.
Yeah, thank you. I
So
appreciate that.
I want to then talk about Retire US itself, the services that you give. And because in one of your posts, you said there were four pillars that you usually concentrate on. There is mindfulness, basic planning, tax mastery, and wealth mastery as the four pillars. And of course, there's so much to go under each one. So if you can just give an idea to the audience today about each one, just a brief idea of what to expect in a way when they work with you and how these four pillars can help them.
Mindfulness is all about your current financial situation. So the key to financial mastery is elevating your consciousness when it comes to your personal financial habits, the way your relationship with money, your vision for the future. It's all about becoming more and more aware of all the facets that really impact your success. Mindfulness is the first step because mindfulness is about the now. It's understanding yourself and your relationship with money, your habits with that money. Habits make us or break us as human beings. The first step in our process is to complete a financial checkpoint. It's actually a financial assessment. And the purpose of this is to give you an understanding, a snapshot of where you are right now in time in relation to your retirement, in regards to your tax planning. And then, what are the red flags or the blind spots? And this to me is the most valuable component. Understanding our current situation starts with understanding what we don't know about our current situation. And the financial checkpoint, it takes about 4 minutes on retire.us. You can go in and get this assessment. The red flags to me are the most valuable component of that mindfulness journey because this is going to bring to your awareness what are the things that you need to educate yourself more around, right? In order for us to move forward, we need to understand where we're going, but we also need to understand how we get there and why it's actually important, right? What's the impact that it's going to make? So that's the first step, is kind of taking inventory of what's your current level of understanding and awareness, and then what do you need to learn? And then in that mindfulness tier, there's a resources tab. So in the resources tab, you're able to start to build financial literacy and understand what are the things that I need to build in my knowledge base in order to then start with the foundational steps. So understanding current situation also starts with understanding our cash flow. So how does money move in and out of the household? And you have basically two core components of cash flow. You have critical cash flow and you have non-critical cash flow. So critical cash flow is our basic living expenses. It's our food, it's our shelter, right? It's the utilities, the electricity, the things that we absolutely need to operate in today's society. Non-critical cash flow is the external things that we do for enjoyment or frivolous spending. And it's not to say that they're not important, but we need to be able to isolate the two so that we can understand where are we actually spending our money, right? Understanding that key then helps you start to unravel your habits of spending.
So basically, you also said at one point that making more money doesn't mean you're financially safe or that you're at peace. And sometimes actually making more money creates more anxiety and more fear.
Yeah.
So let's touch on that point.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head right there of the objective is peace. The objective is financial peace. I've been in the industry for 15 years, and what I've learned through the process is financial planning does not have to be stressful. It actually should not feel overwhelming, and that uneasy pit in the stomach shouldn't be there. If it's there, it's because something is missing. And intuitively, you know it, you're aware of it. You just haven't identified what it is particularly. And generally, it's structure. It's clear structure, systems, and accountability for what you need from your savings, and then process, how you're actually operating on the day-to-day, month-to-month, that is what really creates financial peace. So the objective is peace at the end of the day in our relationship with this stuff. But to your point, what happens is as you start to increase your income streams or increase your net worth, complexity starts to enter into the equation and it can get overwhelming quickly if you don't understand all the inner workings. And that's really where it makes sense to bring in an independent third party where they can help guide you. The good news is there is a way to do it. There's just a structure, there is a process that you can follow that turns this into a peaceful relationship with your financials. The major problem is that most people just are not yet fully aware of that. Take a quick step back. I do want to mention, so basic planning is a step further from the current situation. So when we say basic planning, these are the kind of the other foundational building blocks before we really get to tax. And that's our retirement, our short-term savings, and then our risk and insurance. So mindfulness is really about our current situation, our now, our habits, what's driving the ship either forward or backwards. Basic planning adds on three more functions, which is risk and insurance, our short-term goals and our short-term savings, and our retirement, and having that all cohesive and clear and working together. Once those are established, now taxes become a big implication for the long term. And so when we talk tax mastery, we're generally not talking about taxes in this current year. So, like a CPA, an accountant, is really about getting you deductions on your tax bill in the current year. When we're talking about tax mastery and really tax diversification, we're talking about the big picture, the long-term implications of how the money is going to be taxed in the future, right? By the categorization in which we save it. So there's three ways that the IRS is going to tax categorize your dollars. There is after-tax tax always. This is your traditional savings accounts. This is your general brokerage accounts, investment accounts. The way it works is every dollar that you put in there after tax, any interest that you gain on that is going to be taxable to some extent, whether it's at long-term capital gains rates, short-term capital gains rates. The second type is the most popular savings area, which is pre-tax tax later. So these are your retirement accounts. You're getting a deduction right now, right? The CPA is going to tell you to max out your IRA contributions or max out your 401k to get you as much of a tax deduction in this tax year, which is great. However, that money grows tax deferred and it's going to be taxed later when you take a withdrawal at whatever rates of taxation you're at in the future, right? So if tax rates go up in the future, we're going to be paying more in taxes. And depending on how much we're withdrawing from those accounts, we're going to pay more or less on
And this
those
is
in the
what
future.
you end up calling the time bomb, right? The tax time bomb, because
The tax time bomb. You're right. So this is the trick that has been created. The IRS is the master of the long con. And the long con is, we theoretically say to ourselves, well, I'm going to save this money and I want the tax deduction now because in my highest earning years as a professional, and I don't need to pay the taxes now. So why not pay it down the road in retirement? Because I'm going to need less money in retirement. And in theory, that sounds very true. However, the reality is that there are some stipulations with those accounts. The first is required minimum distributions. So required minimum distributions are a tax law that says, at 73, at this stage, you need to start taking withdrawals from your retirement accounts and paying income tax on them, whether you need the money or not. And it's not a big deal, honestly, for most people at 72 or 73 when this kicks in. It's down the road because the percentage that you have to withdraw from that savings increases every year. And so that required withdrawal increases and increases. But for a lot of people, particularly those that have a lot of retirement savings, most people that fall in that boat that are really good savers end up oversaving for retirement. They oversave for retirement. They get to retirement and their initial assessment was close. It's not that they necessarily are going to be in a lower tax bracket when they retire, but their lifestyle does tend to cost less, right? So they don't touch their savings. Social Security, plus if they have a pension or if they don't, they only end up touching a small percentage of their retirement accounts. And so the retirement accounts continue to grow and they build and they build and they build. And the next thing you know, these required minimum distributions kick in. So, and then that's where tax mastery comes in. So the solution is, again, it's about starting to become much more conscious about the long-term implications, the long-term tax implications of your day-to-day savings. So it may not make the most sense to stuff all of the money into the tax-deferred traditional 401k or thrift savings plan or IRA. There's other avenues. That brings us to that third area of tax categorization, which is after tax, tax never. So these are tax sheltered accounts. And these are things like Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks. The way that this money works is just like the savings account, you put the money in there after tax, but all of the growth, all of the interest is tax free when you take the withdrawals.
Do you work in retire US with investments? Like, would you advise people to invest in, let's say, real estate? Do you have such a plan in place?
Yeah, absolutely. So the major thing that the platform unlocks is access to different disciplines of financial advice. So there's three main disciplines for financial advice. There's benefits advice, there's product advice, and then there's systems-based advice. And they're all uniquely different and they all serve very different purposes. So the benefits discipline is really through your workplace. You have access to a professional that is going to give you guidance and advice on the funds that you have through your company's 401k, the other workplace benefits that are going to impact your financial life. The second discipline is the product professional. The products are the investments, typically the stocks, the bonds, the annuities, the mutual funds, the life insurances, the alternatives, the real estate investments. And these professionals are really focused on growing a portfolio. They're the general investment professionals. Now, the problem is the vast majority of them are not independent fiduciary. They fall under some sort of an institutional umbrella, and they either have a limited product scope or they just don't have to give advice that's in the best interest of the client. Now, it's super important to have access to these product professionals, but you got to have a lot of discernment when you're operating in that area. And then the third discipline is the systems professional. The systems professional are building frameworks and process. It's all about behavioral change. And they're doing so from a fiduciary lens that doesn't come from managing money. And so the idea is most people, unfortunately, start only with the benefits from their workplace. And then, if they're lucky, they go to supplement those benefits with some sort of products. And they don't ever actually really build systems because those systems-based professionals charge anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 a year because they're not managing money. And so, most people kind of take this approach just because of the way the industry is built. With Retire US, the platform kind of sits right in the middle of those three disciplines. And it gives you access to a systems professional, an independent fiduciary, to build you out these frameworks, to build you out the processes of how these different facets of life should be working together. And it connects you with an independent product fiduciary that can vet the entire marketplace, has what's called an open architecture to help support any type of investment advice or guidance with that fiduciary standard. Then those two components should actually be driving what you're doing with the workplace benefits. So the American public, the norm of the industry has set up this situation where it kind of creates a backwards approach. We start with benefits, we then find products, and we're trying to create a system ourselves between those two functions. Whereas you build the systems first, you fill the system with products, and then you supplement the products with your workplace benefits. That's how the masters do it.
And so that brings us to wealth mastery. Is that a part of
Wealth
it?
mastery is the final tier, the final
Yeah.
boss. And that's where, if we've been successful in those first five areas, our current situation, our short-term savings, our risk insurance, our retirement, our taxes, well, the next milestone is how are we going to leave it to our beneficiaries, right? How do we make sure that the wealth that we've created is generational wealth or multi-generational wealth? And the IRS and the state level estate taxes do not absorb a lot of the savings that we've built for ourselves and our family, or our cause of choice, our charities, whatever that may be, gets to have the lion's share of that money.
I just want to draw your attention to the fact that, the 401k in companies does not go to everybody. I'm sure you know that. I was in a company where they had 20 grades, and you had to reach the grade 13 to start, getting the 401k. And if teaching, at a university, you have to reach like a certain level of professorship, assistant professor, before you actually, start benefiting from 401k and other such plans. And of course, there are countries, and a lot of them are our audience as well today, that do not have, these retirement plans where they live paycheck to paycheck. And if they make, $10,000 a month, there is no plan that is set for them by the government or by the company. How can they capitalize their money, regardless of how much they make?
That's a great question. And investment opportunities, types of accounts are not ubiquitous across the globe, right? All countries operate differently. The one thing, though, that is a universal truth when it comes to this type of planning is your biggest asset is time and compound interest. So time and compounding interest. So as long as you can put money somewhere, just something, and it can start to grow. That compounding interest coupled with time is a really, really powerful combination. So the guidance, the advice would be at least find whatever account you can that has some sort of an interest rate that is higher than the inflation rate, right? Or some sort of investment that can target a higher interest rate or growth rate than the inflation rate, whatever country that you're in, right? That is the key. We need to at least make sure that the money is growing at a rate that's higher than things are getting, the rate at which things are getting more expensive. That's key number one. The key number two is if you can just start somewhere and make sure that even if it's 50 bucks a month, right, 100 bucks a month, whatever that may be, and set it and forget it in a place though that is compounding and growing, right? I think the mistake a lot of people make is they finally start saving, but they're saving in a place where the money isn't helping you.
Static.
Yeah, and it's actually losing value because things around it are getting more expensive and this money's being it's stagnant in this space. So it's really about finding a place where you're getting 3, 4+% interest, because historically that tends to be a pretty standard inflationary rate. Ideally, you can put it in a place that can be invested and can target a higher rate of return, but just starting and starting early, right? The earlier you start, I think that the big problem that we see is financials tend to be something that people do not want to approach, right? There's a lot of angst and fear and resistance. And so people kick the can down the road. The problem with that is that every single week that goes by, you're missing out on valuable growth opportunities if you just would have started somewhere.
Recently, we saw plummeting stocks and bonds, and the markets were unstable. But in the end, those who had the long-term breath, they ultimately do make more money eventually when the stocks go up again and the markets stabilize again. So, how would you advise people to behave around moments of uncertainty and panic, so to speak?
Behavioral finance is the pitfall for many human beings. And that's emotional reaction does not serve us well when it comes to investing. It is borderline impossible for us to time the markets, right? And so keeping a long-term lens is really key, and emotionally detaching from the money is necessary. Because our emotions, once the fear kicks in, we can make decisions that are not keeping the big picture in mind. Historically, markets over time have always gone up. That's just truth when we look at the markets, right? We look at the publicly traded markets, but there's plenty of times where they also lose value. The people that lose the most are the ones that panic. And
They
so
just sell right at
they sell. Yeah, they
the
sell out.
time.
And it's really, part of working with a professional, a lot of what the professionals do in times of high stress and high emotion is helping people get recentered and bringing them back to the big picture. Because if we try to operate our financial accounts, our investment accounts particularly, in the weeds on the day-to-day, it's rarely successful. It's very, very rarely successful. So what I suggest people do is one, you have to understand your timelines and understand your true tolerance for risk. So that's important to know. Just your emotional ability to detach from this stuff is key. However, you also need to understand your risk capacity, which means you may, based off your goals, you may need to be taking a certain level of risk, right? Or you may have enough saved where there is money that should not be taking any risk at all, right? Depending on the timeline that you're going to need to access that. And then there's some money that actually may be for longer term still. So even if you're at retirement, this is where systems come into place, right? This is the idea of systems planning, is you're starting to compartmentalize your money into different intents and purposes and timelines so that this bucket of money here we need for retirement in the next 5 years, it has to be exposed to minimal risk. And if the market crashes tomorrow, we can't be derailing our retirement by 2 or 3 years. And we also have this money that is for 10 years plus still in later in retirement. And we have more capacity for risk in that money. So it all comes down to understanding those key components so that you can then be able to take a step back when things are getting a little hairy and say, oh, okay, I know that this money is actually for long term. I'm not going to sit here and focus on it. We have to stay the course. And if you're doing real good planning, I mean, you've been planning for this type of stuff. You plan for the volatility. You know it will happen at some point. It's just about not making rash decisions when it does.
You advise people to have several accounts? Because some people like just have like this one account from which they do everything. What's your advice on that? And how can people be better organized?
It's a really great thought, and I tend to agree with what you're saying about multiple accounts tends to be easier to stay organized, right? When you commingle everything into one place, it's hard to understand the purpose of that money, and it's harder to manage the money that's in alignment with that purpose. So by segmenting different buckets of money helps really just keep the right alignment between each different function of that money from a timeline standpoint and just from a need standpoint. The first bucket is just your operating account, I would call it. So this is your checking account generally, and this is where the money comes and goes, flows in, flows out. Once you get to, a month to 2 months in that account, then you want to start putting the difference into more of like a savings account, which is still liquid, it's accessible, but it's separate and it's actually there for your emergency fund. And it's going to get a better rate of interest than would be in the checking account. Once that's built up to the 3 to 6 month mark, depending on, who you are, you might want to have 12 months of emergency funds. Once it hits that mark where you're comfortable, then any of the excess money should start flowing into a different area, which is generally your short-term savings, right? So this is the brokerage. This is stuff that's there for the 2 to 10 year mark, generally. And then from there, you should have another bucket for retirement savings. So that's kind of the most simplistic way to do it, but just having kind of a little bit of buckets per timeline. And with each of those buckets, right, more and more risk can start to enter the equation.
You have a new a hub on your website for the federal employees that have been laid off recently. It seems that you're offering a lot of guidance and help, so tell us about it.
So the federal workforce reductions right now are a pretty wild scene in that there's not a lot of time for people to make decisions. And the way that the industry is structured, in order for you to get high quality fiduciary advice, you need to go down one of two paths. You need to have money to hand over to somebody to manage to get that guidance, or you're going to need to pay $5,000 to $10,000 out of pocket because you're not handing over money to manage. Now, the issue that most of our government employees have is that almost all of their savings is tied up in the thrift savings plan. So it's actually at their workplace. So they're kind of stuck in the middle here where unless they're willing to shell out, $10,000, $5,000 to put a fiduciary on retainer, they don't have assets that they can hand over. They're kind of stuck and they have to make these decisions at a really short timeline. 2 weeks, 30 days, 45 days to get all their affairs in order and understand whether or not they want to take a deferred resignation or the VERA, which is basically a voluntary early retirement, or risk being laid off at the end of the day with the reductions in force. So it puts them in this very precarious position, and there's not a ton of resources. And so we've really stepped up to be a major resource for our federal employees. We have a hub that's free that at least gives you guidance and resources, checklists, articles around what to do to get your affairs in order and to really start getting a clear grasp. And then if you are over the age of 60 or you have already accepted deferred resignation or activated VERA, we're offering the first month of Retire US Basic Planning for free, which is really goal analysis. It's going to help people quantify and calculate their retirement needs and ultimately what that path looks like for them for any type of an early retirement or a resignation, just to give them clarity on how to make those decisions with the proper information.
That's beautiful. I mean, I love how your company is fluid enough that, you always take in the needs of the current needs of your population. And you saw this issue with the federal layoffs, the federal government layoffs, and you took action on that. I just want to commend you on
Thank you.
that. It's
Thank you. I really appreciate it. We are on a mission to give everybody a better path to financial freedom. And yeah, that's the mission of the company. We feel like the current state of affairs, the way the industry works, does not serve people to the best of the ability that it could. And we're here to change that. And so we will always go where the puck is moving, so to speak, in terms of where the needs are most glaring, and however we can serve, we will.
would you consider opening a retire, not US, a retire world to take on clientele from outside the US eventually? Would you think of for that expansion?
Yeah, it's I love Retire World. That's great. That's I mean that is part of our long-term vision. We're starting right now. We're starting in the United States, and really we're really focusing on catering more towards the population right now that is close to retirement and needs to get these things squared away, because the alternative is putting a lot of their future in jeopardy. And so that's the focus right now. What you'll see over the next few years is that we'll really widely expand to the bulk of the population. And then the priority from there is to translate the model globally. It's every single country, the financial services industry in that country is different. So,
True.
that will be a fun new challenge for us to tackle. But Our mission is to make this accessible to everybody. You know, it's been way too long that high quality financial advice and advanced financial products are reserved only for the 1 to 2% of wealth earners. And we are going to change that in a big way.
That's beautiful. And I'm going to wrap up by discussing O, which is, I think it's a
Oh, yeah.
foundation, right? It's a
Yeah,
foundation.
so O is actually a public charity,
Okay.
and it's nonprofit. It's really humanitarian aid,
And
international humanitarian aid.
you're the chairman, right, of the board, and your wife
Yes.
Kara, I understood that she started this off somehow with an orphanage in Haiti, where she was asking for help to, specifically for that orphanage, and then O grew from there and became this bigger charity. So, tell us about the journey, and are you only now working with the orphanage, or do you have other projects? And just give us an idea of what you're doing there.
Well, I love that. Yeah, this is definitely a near and dear subject to our hearts. My wife Kara was the catalyst of this whole process. Just she's got the biggest heart in anyone that I know. She's a nurse practitioner, and back in 2010, there was a big earthquake in Haiti, and she went on a mission to just support, to support from a healthcare standpoint, and was connected with a lot of different communities down there. And then she consistently went every year, sometimes twice a year, and really cultivated a really great relationship with a lot of different communities down in Haiti, particularly in the Port-au-Prince area by the capital. And what has happened in the past couple of years is been very devastating to the country. So, well, to give you the full story of O. So back in 2019, she brought me down with her on one of those trips. We were down there for a week, and she was running a clinic at a school there, HAC, Haitian American Caucus, which is a really beautiful partner of ours, Sam Darwin. Shout out to Sam, is doing amazing work in Haiti. And we essentially visited three, four different communities while we were there. And listen, just, to be transparent, when you're in a place like Haiti, it's the conditions are challenging, and it's tough to see human beings in some of these really extremely impoverished environments. And the last stop that we hit was this orphanage called Damabia Orphanage, which was really the most challenging to experience. It was about 80 children at the time, and they were just extremely malnourished. They were in great spirits, but they were extremely, malnourished. And we brought a bunch of supplies. We were going there to kind of do like a supply run, play with the kids, hang out, and we were dropping off some food, some clothing, some toys. And the children were so hungry. One of the toys was sidewalk chalk, and the children were so hungry that they were eating the chalk. And it was just one of these experiences that was just like,
Yeah, mind-blowing
Jesus,
and eye-opening and just
this is
heart-wrenching.
crazy. Yeah, it was just, this is crazy. And we were back, and like, it just stuck with me and Kara so heavily from like that day. We were back at the place where we were staying, and O was really formulated kind of in that moment where we were just having a conversation. And I mentioned it to Kara. I was like, my business background was starting to kick in, and I was like, based off of your connections down here, the guy that Michelette, who runs the logistics for all the mission trips, like, I feel like it probably wouldn't be that difficult to at least like set up some sort of food deliveries. And she thought about it, and the next thing I know, she's raising money on social media for the, she got the, she figured it out with Mitch. She got the quote for the first 2 weeks. It was only $600 to feed 80, 80 plus people for 2 weeks at the time. And she started this first delivery, and all of a sudden, the next week she's raising money again. And I could kind of tell just from the business side that if we wanted to really do this, there would need to be a formal structure in place. So together we founded O, which stands for One with Earth. And it's all about helping people put together systems. It goes back to this whole systems thing, which is super aligned, but it's helping people and communities put together systems for sustainability and ultimately independence. And Haiti is a place where we've started this mission. Unfortunately, it's been very challenging with just what's happened in Haiti. After COVID, the president was assassinated. A lot of the structure that existed in the country has fallen. Gangs have really taken over the Port-au-Prince area, and we've really been in survival mode, is just the reality. So anything that anyone can do to help support, where the orphanage is looking like it's probably going to have to move because it's right in the line of the gang march towards an area called Pétionville, which is where all the diplomats live, and they're gradually taking over more space and are moving towards that area. So we're kind of in this position now where we need, it's like all hands on deck. We're collaborating with Haitian American Caucus to start to figure out kind of an exit strategy. So we haven't been able to build the things fully that we want to because external environment has created more of, we got to make sure
Challenges.
everybody's safe. Yeah, priorities have shifted for now, but we're confident that we're going to be able to get everything, the orphanage in a new safe environment and, restart the building towards those systems for sustainability and independence.
The world needs more people like you and Kara, of course. You do your
Yeah.
small part in Haiti, and others do their part in other places of the world, and that's just beautiful. Thank you.
Thank
Thank
you.
you for
Thank you for
doing
saying
that.
that. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for being here with me today. My program and my podcast are definitely so much more enriched because of this interview. It was lovely getting to know you today.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a pleasure, Dada. Thank you so much for having me. I'm always here. However I can help for your listeners, retire.us is a really good starting place for just becoming more mindful. In terms of social media content, at retire.us on Instagram is going to be putting out a lot of content, daily content coming very soon. And then on LinkedIn as well, you can find this. And then for myself, at Mike Scar, Scar, you can find me on both LinkedIn and Michael Scarpati on LinkedIn, but Mike Scar on Instagram.
I hope you enjoyed this interview. I want to thank again Michael Scarpati for being here with us today. And on this note, I'll end this episode. Thank you for listening.